This is Lake Effect on WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for listening today. This week on Project Milwaukee Black and White, we've been talking about the relationship that exists between Milwaukee's white and African-American communities and how it's evolved since the days when legally forced segregation was commonplace in this country. But of course, blacks and whites aren't the only groups that make up the Milwaukee community. In recent years, the size of the Hispanic population here has grown exponentially. The center of Hispanic life in Milwaukee is in the city's near south side. The African-American community is largely located on the north and northwest sides of town. Yet many of the same economic pressures affect the mobility of each of those communities, and many of their members share the same frustrations about their place in the community at large. Robert Miranda and Troy Shaw certainly share frustrations. They're members of what some would refer to as alternative media. Miranda is the editor and publisher of Milwaukee's Spanish Journal. Shaw is the president and CEO of TDS Management Group, which produces a television network called Diversity TV. Shaw told Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke he thinks the relationship between blacks and Hispanics in Milwaukee is actually pretty good.
Well, I would say for the most part, the African-American community here in Milwaukee really has, I believe, a really good camaraderie with the Hispanic community here. We don't have a lot of the same kinds of problems from my vantage point, from what I've seen throughout the years living here in Milwaukee, the same kind of problems that you would see in, say, in California and things like that with the fights and the outright belligerent way that that some Hispanics and African-Americans have towards one another. I mean, the immigration thing is something that does play a little bit into conversations where people would disagree, but they respectfully disagree. But I haven't seen any huge problems with black and brown people in this city.
Robert Miranda, would you concur?
Yes, I would concur. And I say that because over the years I have established and forged many coalitions between black and brown organizations. My organization, Esperanza Unida, has been welcomed and embraced by the black community of Milwaukee in all the work that we do in regards to supporting each other with matters of economic development, job training, et cetera. The issue for the two communities is how do we move forward as a group of people, as a body of people, to set an agenda that is important to both communities and sit at the table with the dominant culture in regards to what it is that we need to do to make Milwaukee a greater city. And what I find that would be a barrier to that is how the segregation in this community is really advanced by these black-white politics, brown-white politics. You know, you have white groups and who are close and working with black organizations and leaders, and you have white groups working closely with Latino organization and leaders. And then what happens is, as a group of black and brown people try to move in to sit at the table with these groups, the issue becomes, well, who's legitimized your group? Because there's no white people there. And we need to have white people as part of your group to be legitimate organization speaking on behalf of black and brown people.
Well, and so I'm glad you used the word segregation, because that's one of those phrases we hear all the time, is that we're living in the most segregated city in America. And segregation today obviously means, I think it means something different than it did in, say, 1950s Mississippi. So what does it mean to say we're living in a segregated city today? What's the effect of the kind of segregation that Milwaukee has?
Well, see, the thing of it is, segregation, just in the term, of course, it doesn't mean the exact same thing that it did in the 50s. Segregation now means less access to opportunities, as opposed to, you know, I'm not going to allow this individual to move into this community. I mean, there's many companies that are now feeling the pinch being sued by creating zoning areas where they didn't allow people of color to move in. No, segregation now is much more deeply rooted in racism, as opposed to, I just want to keep these people separated. And I was involved in racism as well. You see now happening across this country, specifically here in Milwaukee, which is deemed as a hyper segregated community. I mean, beyond segregation, it's hyper segregated, which I then in turn means to me hyper racist, unfortunately. I see segregation in Milwaukee now not just based on where a person stays and lives. It's rooted in political policy, rules and regulations that create racist-oriented feelings here in Milwaukee. And just really quickly, BlackDirectorate.com, a prominent African-American website, has rated Milwaukee the worst place in America for an African-American man or woman to ever live. And that's also including Hispanic individuals as well.
Well, it sounds like, and I want to get your opinion on this too, Robert Miranda, but it sounds like, if I could clarify, it sounds like what you're saying is that one of the reasons it's such a bad place is that the segregation is a more subtle action than it was when it was basically just saying.
Without question. It's not just subtle. It's masked under layers of lies and deceit and what have you. It is more dangerous this way as opposed to the way that it was in the 50s and 60s, because you could see it for what it was. I mean, it was black and white. Racism in these days is interwoven within our society, and that within itself makes it much more difficult to spot and less likely for people to see.
You're both talking about what sounds like, if I could give it a term, institutional racism. Who do you think isn't stepping up at this point? Is it people within the Hispanic or the African-American communities that have a chance to step up who aren't? Or is it people within the Caucasian community who agree with what you're saying who haven't taken a strong enough stand?
Well, I call it the Michael McGee effect. Most political leaders right now are specifically from the African American standpoint, from what I've seen so far, are very hush hush to bring out very blatant problems that exist in our community, and are willing to make a loud enough noise so they can be noticed. See, the Michael McGee effect says, and here's my point. I'm not one that will agree at all with what Michael McGee was convicted of doing. But his methodology gave hope to the individuals who were going through real problems in our community. But what the Michael McGee effect has created was basically a very stagnant, non-responsive, unoutraged political base right now. I mean, you don't see that our minority politicians out there in any huge force. And if it's banging on drums, or if it's holding a town hall meeting and getting all the press to come out there and say the truth.
You're saying they're reluctant to come out and say this because they'll be labeled as, oh, just another Mike McGee.
Well, they'll be marginalized. They'll be isolated. They'll be labeled. And then what happens is there's this tendency by the dominant culture to find people looking like us to walk with them and help put down these folks who raise these issues. And then these folks use these individuals as voices for them to say, look, this guy's wrong because this Hispanic leader is saying this one, mm-hmm. or this black leader is saying that. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones they promote. And those are the ones they put out in the front. But if you really take a close eye at it, and you know, we got plenty of anthropologists out there at UW, and they can take a look at this.
No question.
You'll see that what we're saying is very obvious. Observation is very powerful. And you'll see that the Latino community has been forced out, just like in Brewers Hill. Mm-hmm. You see what happened in the Northridge area,
exactly.
where the blacks have gone in and then business left and money poured out, and now the area is starting to deteriorate.
Exactly.
It's obvious. Now, where the leadership is lacking is the leadership is lacking in making noise and challenging this. And the reason why they don't want to challenge it is, one, they don't want to be isolated or marginalized, or two, they're benefiting themselves. They're out there enjoying the whipped cream and the pie that comes with selling out their own community.
Well, let me take a step back here, and let's talk about the white community here. What do you think the greatest misconception? I mean, what is the greatest misconception that the community at large, but we'll say the white community, has about the African American community and about the Hispanic community? What do you see as their?
I don't think they have a misconception. I think white people want to maintain control of this city. There's no misconception here. You know, white people want to make sure that their status, their interests, all they possess, it remains within their realm. Now, how do we divvy up the resources of the city? How do we make the city whole in a way that there could be more ownership of resources? You know, that's something white people need to start deciding in regards to the communities of color.
So you don't think there, that there needs to even be an attitude shift? There just needs to be a...
There needs to be a material
reflection. A reappropriation needs
exactly.
to take place.
Well, my belief is, without question, yes, that there does need to be a material shift in large part. But you really have to look at the reasons why. The status quo wants to keep things just the way that they are because that means that their children and their children's children are going to have the benefit of what they're doing today. But I think most Caucasian individuals are God-fearing, good Christian people, whether they're religious or not, but they're good people. And so what I believe the status quo, those individuals really make sure that the majority Caucasian population doesn't know the kinds of crimes that they're committing on people of color. Why? Because when Caucasian individuals see the kinds of problems and the kinds of things that are committed on black and brown people, then you start to see somewhat of a shift. And that shift, as we've all seen and we've heard of, was the civil rights movement. Now, many people may not agree what Hillary Clinton had said when she erroneously or should I say belligerently said that, you know, there was no black people who signed or Hispanic people who signed the Civil Rights Act. But the fact is, she's right. And the reason why that happened was because many Caucasian people saw for the very first time on television the kinds of crimes that were committed on people of color. They saw the dogs biting. They saw water blasting them on top for equal rights. So I believe the real target is not black and brown people, because for the most part, they got us in control. Let's allow us to sit back and yabber all we want. What they really are trying to do is make sure that the Caucasian individuals don't see what is being committed upon us. Because when the Caucasian individuals see it and understand it, a shift does start to change.
Sure. And that goes to, again, the leadership of the Caucasian community. Is it willing to allow for that change to happen? Is it really wanting change? Or are we just satisfied with having a black president? You know, and I'll bring the unions into this whole thing. You know, the unions always talking about this need to diversify. But over the last 30 years, how many of these union organizations have black presidents or Latino presidents or locals that are all black and brown or organizations that are all truly communities that are diverse? You don't see that.
You don't see that
at all. And so it is the leadership of the white community, of the dominant society, that needs to start getting its act together if it's really serious about bringing the cultures, the communities of this city together.
At the risk of opening up an entirely new can of worms, where does the media fit in this picture? Because each of you has an audience of people that's very much a subset of the traditional media, if you will. I mean, you write for a largely Hispanic audience, and you reach to a largely African-American audience. Where is the traditional media falling short in getting messages out to the people that you're reaching out
for? Well, they're falling short just tremendously. Matter of fact, they very, very rarely follow anything that is happening in the African-American and Hispanic community unless someone's gotten shot. I mean, you don't see or someone's acting a fool or you don't see positive stories about black and brown people in the mainstream media. Why? Because it doesn't fit the mold. It doesn't fit the status quo. It's not good business, if you will, to showcase positive things that people of color are doing in this community. And so you see the major news media here following suit. But you'll quickly see a story about some black or brown person that shot somebody, or some African-American or brown person or Hispanic person that left a baby in the garbage or something like that. You'll hear that quick, fast, in a hurry. But you never hear about any of the positive stories that people of color are doing in this community.
And largely that's because a lot of the media folk, you know, they have this Rolodex with people who have been around for decades. You know, who's this person? Oh, this person speaks for that community. Oh, that person speaks for that community. Rather than looking for new faces, new names, new ideas, new views, they stick with the same old tired individuals who for the last 20, 30 years have shown failure themselves. Because if our communities were progressing and things were moving in the right direction, some of these poverty organizations shouldn't be around today.
You think there are white people out there that get this?
I think there are. I think there are. I think that, as Troy was saying earlier, there are good people out there who will move for change once they see the injustices. The problem is that they're listening to their own leadership that's part of the status quo and part of that whipped cream society.
Exactly.
They like that lemon meringue pie, and they like a little bit of whipped cream on their nose when they eat it. And they don't want to share that stuff with other people. And it's the same thing with the white community.
And I'll say it again. There is a concentrated effort to keep white individuals' eyes closed to the real truths that are happening in black and brown communities, because if it was done, there would be a groundswell. And so you have this status quo of Caucasian individuals who do recruit people who look like me and Robert,
right,
to make sure that the status quo stays the same. And that what that does, that it creates a unharmonious community as a whole, because we all bleed the same, for crying out loud. And so if we have this unharmonious community, the control can stay with the individuals who want it to stay where it currently is. And that just isn't American.
Well, Troy Shaw and Robert Miranda, thank you so much for getting this conversation going for us.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Robert Miranda is the editor and publisher of the Spanish Journal. He's also the executive director of Esperanza Unida Incorporated in Milwaukee. Troy Shaw is the president and CEO of TDS Management, which produces diversity-themed television programming. They spoke with Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke about their frustrations about the state of relations between Milwaukee's African-American and Hispanic communities and the white community. Coming up, how race affects the LGBT community. We'll be back with that discussion after a short break. This is Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio.